and welcome to the Brick House. You are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. I'm your host, Cyrus Farmer. And folks, let me tell you, we have got a lot to get into tonight. So let me just jump right in and tell you what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about Whiskey Advocates Magazine's 2024 Whiskey Fest. As most of you know by now, I was in New York and I attended that event. It was tremendous. We're also going to be talking about Thanksgiving memories, some of your Thanksgiving favorites. How do you feel about Christmas music prior to December 1st, let's say? We'll answer that question and much more as we go along. And of course, the ever popular, what are you drinking tonight? But first, before we get started, folks, I also want to remind you to like and to subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies about Stomp the Tea. I think we're providing some very good content for you, and we have even more future content to provide. I think you're really going to like some of the stuff we have coming up in the next couple, 3 weeks. So, keep your powder dry on that. Let me talk, before we really get started, a little bit about the Philadelphia Eagles. Boy, oh boy, they are flying right now. It is just so much fun to watch this team play. I mean, in some ways, you kind of hold your breath because they get off to these slow starts. And they were a little bit better this week against the Los Angeles Rams on the road. Kind of sounded like a home game, but they were on the road in Los Angeles. And they have a chance to be a dominant team, but they're still kind of finding their form. It is fascinating to me. Saquon Barkley, obviously, has been worth every single penny that Howie Roseman spent to get him here and more. But if you look at A.J. Brown, I mean, he is just an absolute beast. You look at Jalen Hurts when he's taking care of the football. As efficient a quarterback as you'll see in this league. Devontae Smith, you know, he didn't even play in this game. But he's very good when he's on the field. And the defense, boy, oh boy, oh boy, I'm telling you right now, that defense is really rounding into form. Love the young players that we have. Love the rookies that we have. And even the veterans are doing a great, great job. I was a little worried about Isaiah Rodgers after he replaced Slay. Wouldn't mind seeing Kelee Ringo out there a little bit if Slay does go down or if he can't play. But, you know, you make adjustments in game as you make them. So, all that being said, I do want to say that the Eagles, I think they got a real good game coming up this Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore. I think the Eagles, they're going to make plays against that Ravens secondary, especially if we have Devontae Smith back. I think the real question will be, Eagles going to have to score points. I mean, that's a given. But the question will be, can the Eagles tackle Derrick Henry and or Lamar Jackson? I mean, that's really what the game is going to come down to. If we can tackle them, I say we, I know. If the Eagles can tackle Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, I think they'll win this game in a walk. But if they can't tackle either one of those two or both, then it's going to be a nail biter. I mean, I think it's going to go right down to the wire. Speaking of tackling, let's go back to Saquon Barkley. I got to say, you know, there is this thought and this popular notion that the league MVP is really a quarterback award. And that's largely been the case over the last couple of decades. But it hasn't always been the case. Saquon, to me, is probably, I think he's probably the MVP of the league. Now, there are legitimate contenders for this award. Josh Allen. Who thought Buffalo was going to have the record that they have and play as well as they're playing right now by replacing almost all their wide receiver core? I did not. I thought Buffalo was going to be second or third in their division. Josh Allen has had a tremendous season, and his impact on that team's success is very apparent. Without him, it's very difficult to imagine them doing anything. So I get it. If you take Saquon off the Eagles, I mean, we saw that team last year. And while they were very good the first 10, 11 games, you saw what they were the last six, seven games. So they're not that team anymore with Saquon on them. So I can argue that Saquon is as valuable to the Eagles as Josh Allen is to the Bills. To be fair, Allen's probably more valuable to the Bills than Saquon is to the Eagles. I mean, let's just be honest. But let's see what Saquon does the rest of the year, and let's see what Josh Allen does for the rest of the year, and we can take it from there. Jared Goff. I mean, Goff obviously has had a couple bumps in the road here and there. Obviously, the five interception game, which Detroit won in spite of him, but he's been very good generally this year, and it's going to be hard to, if the Lions end up with the best record in the league, I think it's going to be very, very, very difficult to not give Jared Goff some genuine consideration for league MVP, because he will have been a quarterback who has lit teams up. I mean, this Lions offense, I know they have a dynamic running game. We've talked about that over and over and over again, but it really opens things up for their passing game. And Goff is the one throwing the passes. He's had a very, very good year. So if they went out, let's say, or even if they end the season with two losses, but they still have the best record in the league, I think it's going to be kind of hard to overlook Jared Goff. Not impossible, but hard to overlook Jared Goff as a potential league MVP. That brings us really to our other two contenders, and they both play on the same team. Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. Look, Derrick Henry has been, like Josh Allen, as valuable to the Ravens as Saquon has been to the Eagles. I mean, he has had a tremendous year. It's going to be fascinating to see between the two of them. First, you want to see if they can both get through the season healthy. Fingers crossed for both. No one wants to see anyone get injured. But you want to see how this rushing title comes down, what the rushing title comes down to. It'll be fun watching them go head-to-head this Sunday. So it's a given how good Derrick Henry has been. But to be fair, it is not a given how good Lamar Jackson has been. I mean, if you just look at the numbers, they're mind-boggling. If you just watch him play, it's even harder to believe than his numbers. I mean, Lamar has so much talent. I know his playoff record is dismal. I know people say you can't count on him in a big game. I understand that if you make, quote-unquote, Lamar one-dimensional, i.e. a passer, that you're going to have a much better chance of beating him. I've heard all of that, and I'm aware of all of that. And I know the conventional wisdom. But boy, oh boy, is he a great, great quarterback? The answer is yes. And he is literally on the cusp of winning back-to-back MVPs, his third MVP in the Mahomes era, mind you. If he can actually keep doing what he's doing to this point in the season. You know, it's kind of funny. That Baltimore team, if they hadn't started 0-3, you know, they would have one loss for the season, maybe two, and would have dominated. You'd be talking about the Ravens kind of the same way you talk about the Lions. It's fascinating how that tough start basically kind of really helped them stub their toe, but they had so much talent that they were able to overcome it. Another team who had a tough start, Cincinnati Bengals, have yet to overcome their bad start. So it just goes to show And Burrow is playing well. Joe Burrow is playing incredibly well. So is Ja'Marr Chase and others. But for whatever reason, they can't string together the wins. And that Baltimore defense is not a great defense. Obviously, you know, the secondary can't catch cold. But that being said, I'm looking forward this weekend to seeing the Philadelphia Eagles travel to Baltimore to play the hometown Ravens. It should be a lot of fun. Okay. One more note before we move on. I want to say I feel badly for Brandon Graham. Brandon Graham is a defensive end for the Eagles who apparently tore his tricep against the Los Angeles Rams Sunday night, and that will end his season. He's in his 15th year out of Michigan. He's a Wolverine and had a rough start here in Philadelphia, but literally came on to become one of the greatest Eagles in Philadelphia history. Is he an all-time great? I mean, he's certainly an Eagle Hall of Famer. I mean, he made the most famous defensive play in the history of the franchise, sacking Tom Brady at the end of the Super Bowl in 2017. But he's just a good guy. Always got a smile on his face. He's big, kind of a teddy bear vibe, which is you know, nice. Every once in a while, you appreciate seeing that. So I feel badly that his season had to end this way. This was going to be his last season. It remains to be seen if he stays with that, having his season ended with injury. But all that being said, best wishes to Brandon Graham and his family out there. We love you, big guy, and we know you're going to be keeping that team in check and giving a lot of wisdom and guidance as the Eagles finish the season and go beyond into the playoffs. And on a final note, this MVP race, Saquon, in my opinion, Lamar, Josh Allen, Jared Goff, Derrick Henry, I think it's going to be one of the most competitive, one of the most compelling MVP races that we've seen in a long, long time in the NFL. So I'm really looking forward. You know, Collinsworth made a great point the other night. On Sunday Night Football. He said, you know, don't talk to me about the MVP race this early in the season. It was either Collinsworth or Buck and Aikman. I think it was Collinsworth, though. And they were talking about the fact that it's still too much season to go to be talking about who really is the MVP of the season. And I think in some ways that's absolutely true. So let's watch how this MVP race goes down the home stretch of the season. It is really the home stretch. I mean, we don't have more than like 5 or 6 games each left. So let's see how this thing plays out, and we'll take it from there. All right, folks. I want to tell you about my experience at Whiskey Fest 2024. The second Whiskey Fest I've been to this year. Second one I've been to, I think, within the last 4 weeks. This was hosted by a magazine called Whiskey Advocate. Some of you may be familiar with it. They are the same publishers who put out Cigar Aficionado, the same publishers who put out Wine Spectator, I believe. And this event was held at the Marriott Marquis in New York, right there in Times Square. Folks, I have to tell you, it was absolutely tremendous. Now, as you might have guessed, I did the VIP package. And let me show you some of the things that came with that package. Now, they gave you, those of you who are listening on audio, you won't be able to see what I'm about to show, but you can always go to our socials. YouTube, TikTok, and you can see these items there. They gave out this little Glencairn, like Whiskey Advocate tasting nosing glass, right? That a lot of people like to use when they're drinking whiskey or bourbon or whatever. They also gave out these, a very sturdy tote bag. the Whiskey Advocate branded tote bag. Boy, I mean, you could get a lot of stuff in here, and it's, like I said, it's very sturdy. Additionally, they had the program, which makes a huge difference. Folks, every single exhibitor that was there is in this program. They had a list of them. It was awesome. And they tell you their locations. They tell you what booth they're in, who was there. It was absolutely awesome. Now, in addition to all of that, the VIP package. By the way, whether you were in the VIP, had a VIP ticket or general admission ticket, everyone in attendance got those gifts that I showed you, the Glencairn gas, the glass, the tote bag, the program, a bottle of water, a pen. So it was really well done. If you get the VIP package, though, they do let you in an hour early. And folks, when I say that the Marriott Marquis was packed, I'm literally just talking about the VIP section. There were so many people. You could line up at 5 to go in at 5:30. And there was a line halfway through one of the floors of the lobbies on the upper level. It was amazing how many people had VIP tickets. But there's a reason for that, because you want to get in there. You want to taste some of these exclusive VIP pouring offers. And that's why you get the VIP ticket. I mean, it was a big, big difference. Also, another thing that Whiskey Advocate did right is they had an app. They had a Whiskey Fest app. And this app listed all of the vendors who were going to be there, serving what alcohol they were serving, what vintage it was. Some vendors served like 3 or 4 different offerings. There were some vendors who only had 1 or 2. But you had a list that you could research, and there was a link that you could go to the vendor's website to find out more information about their whiskey, their scotch, their bourbon. And this app was available weeks before the actual event. So you really could dig in and see what you wanted to do before you actually got to the event, which I thought was incredibly helpful. They did not have that in Philadelphia, and it would have been really, really useful. So as a result, I went on the app. I looked at all the exclusive VIP pours that were being offered, what locations they were on the map, where their booths were. And when I got to the actual event itself and found out that there was a program, while I'm waiting to get in, I jotted down in my program which vendors I wanted to go see and which pours I wanted to go try to taste right at the opening bell. And that way I didn't have to keep pulling out my phone. I got to tell you, it's a strange event in some ways, any Whiskey Fest, because like I said before, you have people who go in there and they're kind of trying to get their money's worth, right? Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You spent the money, do whatever you want. But if you're interested, they will give you a wealth of information, especially if you ask. So many of these vendors and exhibitors had people who actually were distillers themselves. The actual distillers from some of these brands were there. They had brand ambassadors there. They had people who really knew the product. And again, that was a big difference between the Whiskey Advocate Whiskey Fest and the Philadelphia Magazine Whiskey Festival, fine spirits and whiskey festival. So I really, really, really liked it. Let me tell you a little bit more about what happened when we were there. At Whiskey Advocates Whiskey Fest, in addition to obviously all the drink, they had a ton of food. They had a ton of food there. Now, I think they probably could have used a little more water and or non-alcoholic beverages. I mean, there may have been some. I just didn't see any around. But that being said, everything else was top-notch. Food was very, very good and plenty of different offerings. You had bao buns. You had New York strip. You had orzo. You had arancini. You had all sorts of stuff. It was really, really well done and well executed. A good time was had by all. This went from, like, if you were a VIP, you got in 1 hour early. So it went from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. General admission went 6:30 to 9:30, right? And in addition to all the offerings they had, they also had, they offered these four master classes, what they call master classes, which are basically kind of small setting tastings with informational sessions. There were four of them. They ran two, they were all about 45 minutes long, and they ran from 7:30 to 8:15 and 8:15 to 9 o'clock or somewhere around there. No, it went from 7 to 7:45 and 7:45 to 8:30. And so as a result, there were three that I wanted to go to, but two were being done at the same time. So I ended up going to only two of the master classes. And by the way, it's kind of a nice break from, like, the main hall because it's on a different level of the hotel. And again, it's a smaller setting. Depending on which class you decide to attend, I went to a pretty popular one, the Elijah Craig, Heaven Hill, obviously, but the Elijah Craig tasting class. And there they took us through their rye and their bourbon, five different offerings. But their brand ambassador, a guy named Bernie Lubbers, fantastic guy. Boy, he sure knows his stuff. He's been a brand ambassador for Elijah Craig since 2012. And he has an infinite amount of knowledge, wisdom, and stories about the product and Heaven Hill in general, not just Elijah Craig. He really knows his stuff. So if you ever get a chance to actually get out, everyone says the Heaven Hill distillery tour is tremendous. And I plan on making it out there at some point in the near future. But if you do get out there, look up Bernie Lubbers. He is fantastic. Really, really knows his stuff, as I said. The other masterclass I went to was from a distillery called Komoro Distillery. Now, that's about 80 to 90 minutes outside of Tokyo. And obviously, they are a Japanese distillery, but they've only been around since about 2023. I think they opened in 2023, so just over a year. And they are literally building this distillery. It's already built, but they're building their inventory as we speak. So their offerings are at least 4, 5, 6, 7, 12 years away. But the interesting thing about what they're doing is they, in their tasting, offered what they called newborns, right? And this is a malt whiskey that has been aged a year or less. Newborn. Fascinating idea, right? Now, if someone hadn't told you that it was aged 1 year or less, you probably would have guessed it because it tastes, quote unquote, young. But that being said, it did have an interesting flavor profile. Ian Chang is the guy who actually did the talk, and he's one of the co-founders of Komoro Distillery. And I have to say, while the product they offered was young, it had an interesting flavor profile. I'm not sure how much more complex it's going to get, but by definition, age is going to help almost any product. So if you want to kind of get in on the ground floor and, you know, maybe find out that you've latched on to a distillery that's going to be putting out product 20, 30, 40 years from now that turns out to be incredibly high shelf, I would take a flyer on Komoro. I mean, I really want to see what they do 5 years from now with some of their product. And I'll be keeping a close eye on the stuff that they offer, obviously, between now and then as well. But I want to catch that first, second, third batch of their aged inventory just to see how it turns out, because the newborns actually were definitely on the interesting side. Now, some of the best things that I tasted when I was there, I obviously tasted. Some of these are on social media. I was able to post brief interviews of some of the people who were there representing the distilleries at the Yellow Spot 12. It's Irish whiskey. Any of the spots are great. There's a yellow spot. There's a green spot. There's three green spots, actually. There's a blue spot. There's a red spot. There's a gold spot. I tasted that as well. It's a 13-year. It's called 13-year Generations Edition. Fantastic. I also tasted a Texas bourbon called Balcones. Now, I have a couple bottles of the Balcones. But this one that I tasted is called Live Oak. And the guys there went through this great description of what that actually means, but I didn't write it down and I didn't tape it. So I don't remember. But just know that you can't get it anyway unless you go to their distillery. So that brings me to kind of like the negative of Whiskey Fest. Problem is, so much of what you taste there is unavailable to purchase retail. Why? Because some of it is being introduced to the U.S. and is not widely available. Some of it is limited edition. Some of it you can only get in bars. They're pushing them in bars first before they sell them retail, because they want to actually build an audience kind of for their product before they start selling bottles. Some, as I mentioned with Balcones, are only available through the distillery if you go there on a visit or a tour. So that's definitely a negative. But to be fair, that is exactly why you go to a whiskey festival, so that you can taste these things that you don't normally have access to. I mean, it's literally a great reason to go to a whiskey fest. Now, Whiskey Advocate, they do this festival, I believe, in three locations: New York, Chicago, and Florida. Now, I don't know anything about the Florida Whiskey Fest, but apparently, there were a couple of guys that I met at the Marriott Marquis who had gone to the Chicago Whiskey Fest thrown by Whiskey Advocate magazine. And they said it was great also, but it was just smaller. So I have to say, pound for pound, it was absolutely worth doing, worth going. I enjoyed it. I know that you will too. If you ever get a chance, make your way to New York. Or go to any whiskey festival. It doesn't matter where you live. You could be in Dublin, Ireland. You can be in Copenhagen, right? If they're having a whiskey fest, go. Because you'll get introduced to all sorts of items that you may, number one, have never heard of. But number two, more importantly, that you may love, but you just haven't had a chance to be introduced to it. Now, I know what you're thinking. Cyrus, great that you went to this whiskey festival, but how much did it cost? Fair question. General admission ticket to this year's Whiskey Fest was $275. The VIP ticket costed $375. And that's essentially for 4 hours of all the booze you can drink and food you can cram down your gullet. Which, again, in my opinion, that's not really the point, but you can take that tact if you want. Folks, let me tell you, it's completely worth it. And it's completely worth doing the extra $100 to get the VIP because you'll get a chance to taste things that you'll never have access to unless you are in a very specific location with a very specific amount of money that you are willing to spend. Like, let's say you're at $7,000. It's a bar in Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles. They have so many whiskeys available for sale, for purchase, by the ounce, the half ounce, 2 ounce, whatever. But it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. Jack Rose, same concept, different bar in D.C., in Washington, D.C. They have a ton of stuff. But again, they're going to charge you basically 8 times your mortgage to have half a dram of the 25-year-old Yamazaki. So you don't have to do that at Whiskey Fest, and you get to have more than one dram. It's definitely worth doing. It's definitely worth going. I continue to be a huge fan of the Whiskey Fest concept, and I will continue from now on to attend everyone I get a chance to. It's awesome. All right, folks. Let's turn the page a little. And as we are in a holiday week, let's talk a little bit about this holiday that we have upon us, Thanksgiving. Folks, I have to tell you, it's one of my favorite holidays, if not my number one favorite holiday. Thanksgiving is fantastic. The food, the family, the camaraderie, it's pretty hard to beat. I know that sometimes there are instances where family or friends or neighbors can have not so great a time during Thanksgiving dinner because of politics, because someone drank too much, because of conversation, whatever. But for me, I love Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is and has always been awesome. It's an awesome holiday. I'm just a big fan of it. I love all the food. Although I have to say, as I've gotten older, I've been much better about not eating myself into coma-like status. I have about one serving of whatever I'm going to eat, and I call it a day. And I feel very, very comfortable. I'm not stuffed like a tick or anything like that. I actually feel very comfortable. I hope to do the same thing this week as well. But let's talk a little bit about some of the things that go on during Thanksgiving. Favorites. These are my personal favorite. I don't know what yours are, but I'm going to tell you mine. What is my favorite Thanksgiving Day dish? Well, for me, that would have to be a well-made dressing. Some people call it stuffing. I call it dressing because traditionally we have never put our dressing inside the bird. It's always baked separately in my family. So it's dressing. It's not stuffing. But a well-made dressing, that's literally my number one favorite Thanksgiving Day food. Some people it's cranberry sauce. Some people it's the turkey itself. Some people it's the green beans. But for me, it is the dressing. Whether it's cornbread, whether it's Pepperidge Farm, whatever. If it's well made, I'm in it. Sign me up. Favorite turkey part? Well, that's an interesting question. There are only so many parts of the turkey, but I have to say, my favorite part of the turkey is the wing. I'm a big turkey wing guy, and I'm not talking about smothered turkey wings. I'm talking about on Thanksgiving Day. I want not the leg. I want not the breast. I do want a little bit of thigh, but give me a portion of that turkey wing, and that I'm all set. I'm a big, big fan of turkey wing. Next, what is your favorite Thanksgiving Day potato? Is it candied yams? Is it sweet potato? Well, for me, it is mashed potato. And I'm talking about regular white mashed potatoes, whether it's Yukon Gold, it's not russet, but usually Yukon Gold mashed potatoes with some cream. I don't know if you want to do with a little garlic, a little leek, a little whatever. But however you make it, if it's well made, I'm a huge mashed potato fan on Thanksgiving Day, obviously with some gravy. My favorite Thanksgiving. Do you have a favorite Thanksgiving? One that you remember more frequently than others? I mean, I would guess most people have several Thanksgivings that they've enjoyed. But for me, one stands out. When I was in college, it was my senior year. And instead of, quote unquote, going home for Thanksgiving, I decided to go visit my brother, who was also in college. Now, one thing you have to understand, folks, about me is that I actually happen to have a twin brother. We're 2 minutes apart. My older brother, my two-minute older brother, at the time was going to school at Holy Cross, and we were both in our senior year. Holy Cross is in Worcester, Massachusetts, not far outside of Boston. And I was going to a school named Carleton College, which is about 35 miles outside of the Twin Cities in Minnesota. So I get on a plane, go see my brother, who was living off campus at the time, his senior year with a few people, but everyone had left. So it's just me and my brother. And it was my first time actually in Massachusetts. So he shows me on campus, which is dead. Everyone's gone. It's Thanksgiving. He lives off campus anyway. But he shows me around campus. And the two of us put together this Thanksgiving bachelor meal. My brother did most of the cooking. That I remember fondly to this day. I don't remember everything we had. We didn't have a ton, but I know we had some turkey. And my brother made some kind of Pepperidge Farm dressing. And I don't know, we probably had some carrots or something like that. But just having the two of us by ourselves in his empty off-campus housing apartment and just being able to talk, to rap, to hang out, no one around. It was literally the best Thanksgiving I've ever spent with anyone. And I've been married for 25 years and I have two lovely children and I have a fantastic mother and father and a wonderful extended family. But I will say that that Thanksgiving I spent with my brother in Worcester, Massachusetts, I think it was the Thanksgiving of 89 was by far my favorite Thanksgiving day. So let me know if you have a Thanksgiving and tell me what your favorite is and why it's your favorite. Okay, folks, it's about that time. I do have a question for you. What are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I am drinking. And it is the Knob Creek Single Barrel Reserve. Folks, I have a couple things to tell you about this product. Let me go through some numbers. Now, the Knob Creek Single Barrel Reserve is distilled by Jim Beam. Jim Beam Distilling Company in Claremont, Kentucky. This particular single barrel reserve that I'm drinking is 9 years old. Now, Knob Creek offers a couple different variations in this. I know they've had the 9 year, and I know for a fact they had the 12 year. I've had the 12 year. This is 60% ABV, which makes it 120 proof. And I got the bottle for $63. What did I get? I think I got it Total Wine and More. I think that's where I got it. Either that or Fine Wine and Liquor. Oh, I think it's Fine Spirits and Fine Wine and Spirits, a PA liquor store, state liquor store. Now, the mash bill, this is what I looked up online because it's not on the bottle. The mash bill allegedly is 77% corn, 13% rye, and 10% malted barley. Now, there is some slight variation. If you go to a different website, they'll tell you that it's 75% corn, 13% rye, 12% malted barley. But you know you're in the neighborhood of those numbers. It's probably, you can probably split the difference, even though the Jim Beam doesn't. They have a very exact mash bill. I just don't know what it is with Definity. Now, I can tell you that this single barrel reserve, it's actually, it's spicy. It's really spicy on the palate, but without the burn. Very strange. And a nice quality, actually. When I drink it, and again, I told you I've had the 12-year, but I actually like the 9-year better than the 12-year, just in quality. It's definitely a little more on the savory side when you sip it, which is a little surprising because with such a high corn focus, I mean, 77% to 77%, you would think it'd be sweeter, but it's not. It's actually a little more on the savory side, unless and until you add either water or ice. And when you do that, it really kind of opens it up and mellows out the bourbon in a way that you really get a sweetness out of each and every sip. Really, really, really well crafted. I have to tell you. I think, and I shouldn't say I think. I know this for a fact because I've done it. This Knob Creek Single Barrel Reserve, it's a great cigar bourbon. It just is. If you happen to smoke cigars, pour yourself some of this Knob Creek Single Barrel Reserve with or without ice and smoke away. It's a really, really good pairing. So, honestly, at the end of the day, I like this 9-year Knob Creek Single Barrel Reserve. I've liked it. I've bought several bottles of it. You should too. It's affordable. It's affordable without breaking the bank. And you don't have to drink it every day. It's high enough proof to where you're not going to go through the bottle in one night or two nights. It's just, it's a good value. And it's a good, interesting, complex flavor without being pretentious. All right, folks, that is our show for tonight. As always, tell your friends, tell your enemies, do everything you would do to support any show that you like. Now, we will be right back at you next week. Obviously, we'll go back to our normal day next Thursday with a brand new episode full of content that you can't find anywhere else. But from the bottom of our hearts, have a happy, healthy Thanksgiving Day. And don't forget to tell the people you love that you love them. Doesn't have to just be on Thanksgiving, but definitely, definitely do it on Thanksgiving. Before you get into any arguments, then go at it, go crazy, do whatever you want. All right. That's the show for tonight. Folks, as always, Cyrus Farmer, Stomp the Tea. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.